What did the buffalo say to his son as he left for college?
I have no idea.
Bison.
Oh my gosh. Are you going to use that on the show? Are we in the show? I don't even know anymore.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Welcome to episode 15 of Fathers of the Grind. My name is Tim Nestor, and this is Derek Teague. Derek, don't be too embarrassed. It's fun. Come on.
Bison.
It's fun. Bye, son.
Bison.
I do love a good dad joke. And hey, you know what? You know who else loves them? Is Daniel and Frank. I think those two guys in particular.
Yeah, they wanted us to actually just stop talking about games and crack dad jokes the entire time.
Yeah, I think the hashtag Frank used was weekly segment. I think that's what he said.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So there you go, Frank. That one was for you, my friend. Derek, how's it going, man? What's going on with you? What are you playing? Anything you want to get off your chest and share with the group? You're angry about something that happened last episode. That's what I'm trying to set you up.
I mean, I didn't know if you wanted me to talk about it because I didn't want to like have us fight on air, but I thought you were...
That makes for good drama. Let's do this. Tell me. Let it out.
Two. Hold on. We're not totally planning this. One, two, three. All right, now I'm angry. you censored me, and I thought that was ridiculous. You said I quote, cross the line.
Yeah, well, you know what you did, and you know what you said.
So I thought that was ridiculous.
The groups of people that you insulted. You know what happened.
I mean, all I got to say is the group, you know, Fathers of the Grind, or FOTKA, as I like to call it, FOTKA had my back. They don't believe in censorship. They called you out a few times. I noticed you ignored it, too. That's convenient.
Yeah. Well, you caught me at a busy time of the day, number one. And number two, I was like, this is actually better if I just stay quiet. Because it took on a life of its own. Worked out fine.
To generate anger and rage against you.
That's right. So. And I know that some of the comments were cut off halfway. And then they would comment after that saying, look, Tim censored me again.
Yeah, Daniel started typing something like, censorship's not a censored by Tim. I was like, oh,
that's
Tim
pretty good.
Got him again.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Yeah, but as far as gaming, we had a big release last week. We record on Thursdays, as many people know. So basically on Tuesday, a bunch of games released that I got. Picked up Dark Souls 3, picked up Ratchet & Clank, and picked up Stories, The Path of Destinies. So I've been actually playing all three of those. We'll talk about Dark Souls more probably later, so I'm not going to dive too much into that. But the game that surprised me the most was, and it was the one that I would say I had my fingers crossed, like, please be good. I really want you to be good because I hate indies. And this is an indie game, so please be good. And that was Stories, Path of Destinies. And I got to play that Tuesday night. I've been really focused on Dark Souls after Tuesday night. But I played.
Did you make any decisions yet? Like, did you pick any paths one way or the other?
Yeah, I actually completed a whole story.
Oh, wow. You got farther than I did then. Okay.
I finished. I don't know how this all works. And somebody can, and you know, they'll clear me up. But I think there's like 24 stories based off all these decisions and stuff that you make. And when I completed my story, it said number 5. So I don't know if that's based off decisions I made, that was what number 5 was. And then if I make different decisions, I will be 3, 2, 1, 16. I don't know.
Okay.
But I did start story number, I'm saying 2, but I don't know what it is. But I kept going on the journey, and then I kind of stopped there to focus on Dark Souls. But anyways, what I want to say about this game is it's phenomenal. It's just a really, really fun game. It reminds me a lot of Bastion, but I think it's better. I liked Bastion, but I wasn't in love with it. So far with this game, I think the gameplay is better. I've seen people describe it as like a Batman Arkham Light type combat system.
So. With the counters and stuff, I guess so.
Yeah, but I don't even completely agree. I mean, I understand where they're getting that from, but it has more of a Diablo action RPG mixed in with a little bit of Batman Arkham. But it's done really well. In fact, you know, I thought this game was going to be easy because it kind of starts off with like, oh, fight these two birds and you just destroy them.
No, the challenge goes up pretty quick.
But as you progress and they start throwing more and more enemies and the enemies vary and you start getting more, you start unlocking more things you can do, it gets kind of complicated. I died quite a few times towards the end of the chapter, but or story, I should say. Yeah. But really good game. Highly recommend it. It's not expensive. It was $13.50. It's regularly 15 full price, regularly 15, but it was 10% off for the week that it was released. So
yeah,
when you guys hear this, it should still be on sale.
Yeah, I recommend it too. And your comparison of Bastion and Diablo, I totally agree. Yep, it's very good. Highly recommend it. Go get it.
Yep. And then I played a little bit of Ratchet and Clank. I wanted to talk about this game because it's the game that I bought. You know, I bought it for me, but as I thought about it, I was like, man, I could put this game on easy and play it with my kids.
Right.
Ian's not really a big gamer, so even though he's like, yeah, I want to go see the movie, he's not wanting to play the game. But Eli is really into it so far. Nice. In fact, tonight he came home from soccer. He actually got in a fist fight. That was interesting. But
wait a minute. What happened? Did he win?
Well, I mean, the whole story I got, and you got to understand, I'm only getting one side because I was at home cleaning and doing, you know, stuff.
Okay, so you weren't there for this fight.
No. Ian had practice. Eli went to just go play with his friends. And the wife was up there, you know.
It was a pickup game of soccer, and he got in a fight.
No, he was on the playground, and the friend that he was playing with was getting picked on by another kid. And Eli, and I may have said this in the podcast before, he's real protective. So if he sees
I have felt his wrath before.
yeah, he's very protective. A lot like his dad. I'm very much like this. If he sees somebody getting picked on, that's... And his mom's like this, too, actually. But he comes to their defense, and he's very aggressive in doing so. So he actually got in a physical fight with the kid. And then as he was, I guess, and again, this is just the version I heard, was actually beating the kid up, the older brother of the kid came over and started beating my son up. And then it finally got broke up by adults. But I gave Eli a bath tonight, and he had bruises, scratches. He was all cut up. Like, I was angry as I was bathing him because I was like, I want to go beat somebody up right now. Because he was actually pretty badly messed up.
Oh, that sucks.
And the kid that was fighting him, the one that came over to kind of, I guess, rescue his brother, he's older. He's, you know, 10 years old, so... Not really hard to beat up a 7-year-old when you're 10, so a little frustrating. Man. But anyways, back to Eli. He's been loving Ratchet, so he came home after, you know, his interesting night at the soccer fields, and he's like, Dad, after I take my bath, can I play some more Ratchet? So I let him play. He's been really enjoying it. He's figuring out the little mini puzzles or whatever, the little areas that he's gotta figure out. And he's just really enjoying the game. In fact, tonight, to get him to go to bed, I was like, hey, you want me to play Ratchet in front of you, and you can just watch and then eventually fall asleep.
Right.
That was the plan. He didn't fall asleep. I had to switch it to Rocket League to get him to fall asleep. So I played a little bit of Rocket League, and then I turned around, and he was out cold.
Nice. Nice. Well, yeah, and like you said, we'll talk about Dark Souls 3 in a little bit, but like... I totally agree. It's been a good week of game releases, and you just described two very different games, and we haven't even talked about the biggest release of the week, and that was Dark Souls 3, and that, of course, is totally different from both of those two that you just talked about. So it's been a good week if you like a wide variety of games, which I think both of us do. So I totally agree with you on stories. I won't talk about that too much more. You already gave a great description of that. And you're farther along in it than I am. I think I'm in chapter 3. I've already made two decisions And so I like the way it's branching. And the narrator definitely harkens back to Bastion. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first started playing that game and I started breaking boxes to, I forget what the collectibles are in Bastion, but I was breaking boxes to get whatever, just a habit of playing so many games over the years. And the guy just starts saying, and the kid decided to rage for a while. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is so fun. Like, the narrator was, quote unquote, observing what I was doing. It was very cool. And so
yeah,
this one has that same vibe. This one has that same vibe where he's, you know, telling the story. And it's kind of the same with Ratchet and Clank, which is the one that I've been playing the most. And that is where you've got Quark telling the story. He's narrating the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from his point of view. And he does a bunch of narration throughout. And I don't know if it says, I don't think so far from what I've played, it says active or regular as the other narrations from Bastion or from stories. But it still is there from time to time. And the writing is really clever. The voice acting is, it's great because it's just very fun, loving cartoon characters. Probably the best looking game I've seen on the PS4, at least maybe not in terms of realism. That'd be something like The Order 1886.
Mm-hmm.
But just overall colors and visuals and the depth of field and the frame rate, like everything is just beautiful. And the particle effects.
It's like, really well done.
I can't believe it. And so my kids have watched me play. I let them play around with it a little bit, but they kept handing the controller back to me and saying, hey, you play it. They just wanted to watch because it's like a cartoon. It's very much like a cartoon.
I didn't play Ratchet and Clank games when they originally released on the PS2 or PS3.
Right.
My friend was a big Ratchet and Clank fan, and I finally broke down and bought them. Well, this is back in the PS2 age. I bought all the PS2 games when they were like $5. Like, they were
right.
Really cheap pre-owned. And yeah. I played like one for like 30 seconds, and I'm like, no. And the reason I bring this up is because I'm playing this new one because I'm interested in, being that I'm a little bit more open of a gamer, I play a lot more games. The only thing I crap on is indies. I'm pretty open to those. But my
the
point is, when I started playing this Ratchet and Clank, my only critique, and again, somebody could be like, but that's Ratchet and Clank, but, you know, I would want it to be a little bit more modern, is the shooting is a little old feeling. Like, it doesn't feel, like, smooth. And again, I'm early on in the game. I don't know if you upgrade your weapons or anything like that. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah, you do, and you also get a ton of weapons. So you have a lot of new weapons you can buy. I think I own like 7 or 8 weapons, and I've upgraded 2 of them all the way to the max. Like the pyro gun, like that flamethrower, I've upgraded that, so it's got a nice wide spread and it shoots pretty far, but it's still like a shotgun range in terms of how far it can shoot. And then that main blaster you get at the beginning, I've upgraded that to shoot a lot farther, and it has a much better aim, a much faster rate of fire. And there's a few other guns too that they've added in, everything from a grenade launcher. There's an item you can throw. It's like a grenade, but it's a disco ball, and it makes all the enemies dance, and they're kind of stunned. It's essentially a stunning weapon, but that makes them dance instead. They can't stop dancing until the ball goes away. And you can upgrade that to last longer and to cause more different kinds of effects. So there's lots of ways to upgrade your guns. I agreed at first. I thought, I don't think I need to shoot. I'm just going to use this wrench for everything. That's all I need, this Omni wrench. But as you upgrade the guns, you discover, like, you know what? These are actually pretty awesome. Once you get the power up and the abilities up. So I agreed with you at first, but now I would say, no, the shooting's actually exactly what it needs to be. It's very fun. It's the kind of guns, kind of weapons you would never use in any other game. Like, you're never going to play a game, a shooter that's going to have, a gun that makes everything dance or something like that. So it's really clever. It's really charming. You're right. It's not perfect in terms of shooting. It's not a cover-based shooter, although you can hide behind cover at times. But it's really not a cover-based shooter. It's meant to be more just run and gun and shoot. The enemies aren't that hard. My best way of describing Ratchet & Clank, if you've never played it before, let's say you've never played the Ratchet & Clank games. Maybe you've played Mario, the 3D Mario platforming games. You've played a few others, maybe Spyro, but you never got into Ratchet & Clank. If you ever tried a game like Knack for the PS4, that launch game, this Ratchet & Clank is everything that Knack is not, but it's trying to be. I mean, Knack is trying to be something like this, where it's a fun-loving, almost Pixar animation-looking game with colorful characters and really fun combat against big, you know, cartoony enemies. And Knack was too inconsistent in its difficulty spikes, and it just wasn't fun. And this is the opposite of that. It's got a nice level playing field. Even on normal, I feel like it's not too hard. The checkpoints are very forgiving. So if you make a mistake, if you fall, if you die, it's very forgiving. Like, you don't have to start way back. I mean, it's definitely geared towards a family experience.
Yeah, which is what I wanted.
Same here. Yeah, and I know that there's a harder mode, and there's a ton of collectibles. You collect these holo cards, and as you complete these different sets of holo cards, you can either get people to craft new weapons for you. You can get small little stat upgrades to your weapons, like a faster rate of fire or higher damage. So there's lots of collectibles, and they actually lead to something other than just that itch to collect everything. But it's really, really good. It's just fun. It's just pure fun. That's the way I would describe that game. It's just pure video game fun. It's a great 3D platformer. It's only $40. So if you're going to buy a game this spring and you're not really one who's a glutton for punishment with something like Dark Souls 3, I would recommend getting this one, especially if you have kids. This is a great, great game. And at $40, you're definitely getting your money's worth. So
yeah, and there's been a lot of chatter from a lot of our members in our group talking about Ratchet and Dark Souls. So they're both really popular games. Some people, like me, got both. Both of them are really good.
Yeah, if you hadn't gotten it for me to come to your house and borrow, then I would have gotten it. It's one that at first I thought, no, I don't want another remake. But then when I discovered that they aren't just remaking this game or, you know, remastering this game, it's actually a good amount of the original stuff. And certain parts of it do ring a bell because I did play the original a long time ago. But a good amount of it feels and looks and plays like a brand new game. So I think there's enough new stuff there. If you are a huge Ratchet & Clank fan, still worth it. And if you are more of a casual Ratchet & Clank gamer like I am, where I think I played, like you said, maybe two of the games, something like that. But I mean, I think I played them and beat them, but it was so long ago. And I remember liking them, but they weren't so memorable that I could tell you the story or anything like that. I just remember liking them and them having crazy weapons. That's all I could tell you. So, yep, it's a really fun game. Loving it a lot. So I'm playing that. Right now I'm in the middle of three super charming games, which is perfect timing. I just wrapped up God of War 3 Remastered, which was better than I thought it would be. I really enjoyed it. And now I've moved on from that really dark, brooding, insanely gory game into Tales from the Borderlands, Stories, and Ratchet & Clank. So I'm kind of definitely turned the page away from some of the darker sides of gaming, for the moment at least.
I think that's a good thing to do. I know last year, you know, I spent a lot of time playing Bloodborne. I mean, I probably put a month and a half of gaming, if not longer. I really don't remember. It was such a draining experience. Because I was so determined
to beat
it. You're
not selling me on it.
Well, I'll sell you on it later.
Okay,
right now, I have to tell this story this way.
Okay.
So anyways, it was kind of a draining but exciting experience. And after I beat Bloodborne, Dark Souls 2 released on PS4 and Xbox One. I was like, well, you know, and I played a little bit of Dark Souls 2, but I didn't beat it or anything like that. And I beat Bloodborne, and that was my first, I'm going to say, Souls experience that I beat, even though it's not really a Souls game. So I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll jump into Dark Souls 2. And I booted up Dark Souls 2, played it for about 10 seconds, and I'm like, nope, not doing this again. You know, because I just went through all this. Plus, Dark Souls and Bloodborne, even though they're similar, and we'll talk about this again later when I start talking about Dark Souls 3. There are significant differences that make one, in my opinion, more fun than the other. But the point I was trying to make is the tones of the game were exactly the same. They were brutal, they were dark, they were unforgiving. Mm. And to already experience that and then try to jump into it again was, in my opinion, for me, stupid.
Yeah.
So it's a nice change-up, and I think that's a good thing you're going from kill everybody and your mom plus gods to, hey, you know, something that just either makes you laugh or you can play with your family.
I will say this about God of War 3 without, again, we need to get to a few other things, but just without giving away too much of the story, there are parts of that game that I really enjoy towards the end. They give some great human moments, I would call them, to Kratos. And I was like, hey, they're starting to build out his character a little bit. You know, six games in, finally starting to give us a little bit. And then that was the end of the game. But that being said, most of the game was very consistent with his almost animalistic, uncontrollable anger, almost to the point of thinking like maybe he's dumb, like he just doesn't understand the havoc he's causing. Like there's just something about the way that game progressed that was annoying me, and I'm glad it ended the way it did. I liked the way it wrapped up. I liked the story.
I don't remember a thing about it. I remember beating it probably 2 years ago, and being like, oh, I liked it, but it's not as good as the first two, and I don't remember anything.
Well, by the time you beat your fifth or sixth main character, and I won't give away like what kind of character, whatever, in case you play it, but by the time you beat the, you know, fifth or sixth main boss or character who's begging for their life, you start to feel real, just not even just gross because it's bloody, and it is very bloody, but just gross that like you don't have a choice but to be this unforgiving maniac. Not even unforgiving, but just like uncontrollable. This individual actually did nothing bad to you, but you're gonna rip their head off anyway because, you know, their eyes have power that now you can use as a weapon for this thing, you know. So I don't know. Some of that bugged me a little bit. So I'm glad to be moving on to something a little bit happier. So loving Ratchet.
Admit it, you're just weak.
Yes, I'm very weak. Hey, that final Zeus fight was not an easy fight. I remember that from God of War.
Spoilers: too. Zeus is in God of War.
Oh crap! Yeah, spoiler alert. Crap. Never mind. I can't even cover it up. I totally just spoiled it if you haven't played it.
Oh, who cares?
Who cares? Yeah, I agree. All right.
All right. Moving on.
There's been some recent developments in the gaming world, and we're going to highlight a few of these things that have hit the news wire. And so I don't want to cover everything. We've experimented with this a little bit through the course of this podcast over the last few months. We've gone through a huge list of headlines and tried to move quickly. That doesn't usually work. We've narrowed it down to like a pick three or pick one of these five. And there's a lot of different ways we could cover it. You know, give me a 5-word reaction to this headline. So what I want to do this time is I just hand selected a few from the last couple of weeks that I know that both you and I have at least some level of interest in. And so we'll talk about that, and we'll move on to the next one, and then we'll get to our main topic after that. But what I don't want to do is continue a conversation that you, the listeners, aren't super interested in. So we'd love to hear your feedback, too. You know, what types of news stories would you like us to cover? Or if you find something interesting, post it to our group on Facebook, and we'll talk about it that next episode. So we want to get feedback from you guys and use your ideas, and that's already been really great. We've actually already gotten a few ideas from you guys for past episodes, so keep those coming.
Yeah, last episode we talked about, you know, the generations and consoles, and that right. came straight from our group, from JP, so.
Yep. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff, you guys. Well, let's talk about Capcom a little bit. They are planning to release more versions of Mega Man and Monster Hunter, which is great. That's great news. Well, here's the not-so-great news, is they're going to be in the form of mobile titles. And so when I saw this headline, it really did throw me off. Like, oh, cool, they're going to make some more Mega Man. Never mind. You know, oh, some more Monster Hunter. Oh, never mind. So they're going to have them on mobile. Now, the reason I wanted to share my reaction to that is because I don't know if it's a completely fair reaction. Like, I'm very quick to roll my eyes and sigh about something coming to mobile. The reality is, if you're a business, if you're a company, and you want to make a sure thing that's going to get a good number of eyes on it, it's going to be easy to develop. You know, everyone develops apps and games these days for mobile. Everyone can do it, or you can very quickly outsource that if your company can't do it internally. So if you're a business or a company and you want to keep an IP fresh and keep it, keep that brand going, this makes sense. 100% makes sense. As a gamer, though, it's disappointing to hear because it feels like a cop-out. It almost feels like they're quitting on real games. But they did post on an investor relations website, they said they're going to have 4 titles between now and this time next year. So sometime in the next 12 months, they're going to have 4 titles, including, but not limited to, the Monster Hunter and Mega Man franchises.
I mean, I think, you know, I'm fine with it as long as they continue to support the franchises on consoles or handhelds. And they do. Mega Man just got a collection that released that a lot of people excited about.
Yeah.
Monster Hunter just released a game, I think, last year, and they're releasing another one this year. So, I mean, these games come out, and to create a Monster Hunter game is not that hard. I don't say creating a game is hard in general, or I should say creating a game is hard in general, but Monster Hunter is not like a story-driven narrative. Like, it's the same thing over and over. So they can release 20 different versions of it, and nobody's going to care. If you're a fan, you're just going to pick up the one that interests you the most. So, and it also makes sense because mobile's huge, you know, over in Asia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that it's not big here, but I think gaming, like mobile gaming,
right,
selling AAA type titles on a mobile is big over there compared to if you look at their console sales are generally way lower than America.
Right.
So,
on their investor relations site, they do specifically talk about strengthening their licensed content in Asia with their new mobile strategy. So you're right. That's definitely a target audience and a target location. They did make sure to say that their commitment to continuing to develop games for core users will not change. Now, I don't think that means any. You know, I think that means console gamers and maybe portable handheld gamers. I don't think that they are planning on scaling back their console and handheld development. Although I don't know that they were, you know, turning out games every month or anything as it is. I feel like there's a lot of there's a lot of space between Capcom releases.
So. I think the way a lot of these Japanese companies are working is they probably are using mobile because, like you said earlier, it's a little bit simpler, it's got a bigger audience, and it's huge in their country to probably help fund, because they probably make a good amount of money off them, to help fund the core gaming projects that sell decent but don't sell at the rate that they probably want. Because I know a lot of Japanese companies have been struggling selling AAA or big titles that used to sell huge back in the day. They're just not hitting the numbers that they want with as much as they're investing. So if these type of things like, hey, we're going to throw some stuff on mobile to make a quick buck, if it's going to help fund future projects that we actually want as gamers on our 3DS or on the Wii U or on the Xbox or something like that, I support it.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure that I know that Capcom is a much bigger company than a company like Atlus, but I wonder if seeing Atlus get acquired by Sega like that has spurred on any of these companies to, I don't know, just kind of lit a fire under them a little bit to get things going. So anyway, you see things like that happen and you wonder how that motivates other companies. I'm sure it does something. Another big game that's coming out here in a few weeks is Uncharted 4. You might not have heard of it. It's a little indie title.
I haven't. I mean, I accidentally like pre-ordered stuff that said Uncharted on it, but I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, well, here's a statement that came out from their director, Neil Druckmann. This is interesting, I thought. And he said that the ending of Uncharted 4 will have people arguing. And this is based on some test groups that they've allowed to play the game and experience the story. And based on what he's heard, the game's ending will be divisive. And I purposefully did not read all the way through this article in case there was some kind of hint about something in there. But I wanted to stop right there and just say, okay, Neil Druckmann is telling us that based on what he's seen and, of course, based on what he knows about how the game's put together and how the story will conclude, he's saying there's a high chance, a high likelihood that people are going to feel upset by this ending. Some people will like it, some people won't. It's going to be divisive. I don't know. It kind of harkens back to something like Mass Effect 3, you know, as people, you know, were very much in disagreement on how that game closed out, how that series closed out. So I want to ask you, unless you, if you know something, if you somehow read a spoiler, obviously don't give that away, but just your prediction, your prediction as someone who's going to be playing this game here in a few weeks, what do you think? How do you think this thing's going to end? What's your prediction on maybe the fates of the characters? What is it that's going to be so divisive, do you think, about this ending?
Well, they've said all along that this is their last Nathan Drake Uncharted. So Nathan's done for Naughty Dog. Right. Now, I've heard this before, so I'm not going to act like this was my thinking. I would love to come out and say, well, Nathan Drake's going to die. They're going to kill it off and kill off the franchise.
Why would you love to say that?
Well, I like people dying. But but I know from a business standpoint, Sony would never allow that. And I don't even know if Naughty Dog would allow that. They understand they got something special with Nathan Drake and Uncharted. And even though they're coming out and saying, hey, we're not going to make, or at least not in the near future, make any more with Nathan Drake, somebody else probably will. So I don't think you're going to see a huge death from some of the beloved characters. But I think what they're going to try to do is they're bringing in some new characters that are close, and I'm not going to go into spoilers or anything like that, but they're bringing in some characters that are close to some of the main characters in these games, and I think what they're going to do is build relationships and kind of get you to care for them too, and then probably kill off one of them.
Okay.
Or, you know, who knows, maybe they're going to kill off Nathan's wife. You never know, or something like that. But I will say this, I'll add this, beyond predictions, I'm really happy you came out and said this. And the reason why I say that is I'm really happy that they are not backing down from their vision. Even if I come out and say, now let me set the stage here. I have gone crazy with my pre-orders for Uncharted 4 because I guess you could say I'm a fanboy. I traded in a lot of stuff, and I've already pre-ordered the console. I've got the collector's edition pre-ordered. I even have a free digital copy. I got it from some guy in Ohio. I don't know how I got it, but I got it. I'm not even doing game share.
It's
weird.
Well, so I have, you would never do game share. You've got too much. Game. Yeah, you've got too much ethical backbone to do something like that. Yeah.
So the reason I share this is not to brag or for people to judge me and say, you buy too much, you're stupid. I'm doing it because this is a special game to me. This is the last Naughty Dog Uncharted with Nathan Drake. And I've never bought a collector's edition for an Uncharted game before. So to say I'm a little bit hyped is an understatement.
Yeah.
I want this game to be great. But I understand now going into it, I may hate the ending. But I'm glad they're doing that, though.
If any of you listeners haven't played Uncharted 1 through 3, go ahead and skip ahead, like, let's say a couple minutes, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, okay? I'm going to ask you to pick a character, Derek, who, if you had to say, okay, one character is going to die. One of our favorite beloved characters is going to die. Not someone they introduce in this game, and, you know, that doesn't count. But one of the originals is going, or at least from Uncharted 2 and on, is going to be killed off. Name that character. Who's going to die? If someone's going to die, who is going to be?
Oh, I already said I think it'll be Blondie, the wife.
Okay. Okay.
So, you know, I wanted to... most people are going to say, oh, no, it's going to be Sully. But they've, like, killed off, but not killed off Sully multiple times. That, to me, would be, like, if I saw...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they could pull it off because they could be, like... It could be one of those things where it's, like, Sully's dead, and your mind, if you've played all three of these games already, your mind's going... No, we've gone down this path before.
Yeah.
He's not really dead. And then you actually find out he's really dead. And they ended on that note or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That could definitely be controversial. Okay. But I do think if she's actually in the game, a lot more than just, hey, it's my wife, come meet her, you know, from the one trailer I have seen, I think they could kill her off.
Okay.
And that could be the big blow to Nathan.
No, I think one of the new characters they introduce is going to have a connection to Nathan. I think that character is going to kill Sully. I think that's going to be a catalyst somewhere in the second act, maybe beginning of the third act. That's going to be a catalyst for a big emotional, you know, final few levels. That's what I think.
Well, I think you should write the game.
So. No, that would be awful. Dad jokes all around. Come on, Nate. Let's tell some dad jokes.
I'm excited for this game. I think it's going to be great, even if I walk away going at first. And maybe it's just the type of gamer I am. I make jokes all the time making fun of other people saying, you know, I demand games be made the way I want them to be, not how they envision it.
Right.
Because we do, unfortunately, live in a games media society that tries to dictate how games should be developed and made.
Right.
And if they're not made exactly how we want, we freak out.
True.
So while I might get disappointed by a game, a lot of times I usually sit back. I did this with Mass Effect 3. I wasn't, first of all, that disappointed by the ending. But I sat back and I said, all right, what are they trying to accomplish with this game? What did they do? What is so bad about this ending? And then I realized the entire game is the ending, and I was like, they did a phenomenal job. I got a chance to say goodbye to everybody I need to say goodbye to. I got to see people die that I didn't want to see die. I got to build relationships with people that I want. And they ended it perfectly.
Yeah.
And so that was the vision that they were trying to create, and I liked it. So the point of me sharing that is I think even if Uncharted 4 is as divisive as he says it is, I think I'll be okay. Even if my initial reaction is, why'd you do that? Or I hate this. This is stupid. I might be able to sit back and go, I get it.
I like the quote that he has in this interview. He says, I would rather people hate it than be indifferent to it. And I can respect
that was what I was going to get into, and I got sidetracked. I like that he said that. I like that he's saying, look, guys, we're creating this game, and we're not going to back down. Yeah. We understand the pressure. We understand that there's going to be millions of people playing this, and that they're going to have this thing in their head from all this hype of what this game should be. And I guarantee him and his team are like, well, we could take the easy way, or we could just be us. And I'm really hoping they're just being them, and that they create what they want to create.
Right. Right.
They have a track record of doing pretty good at that.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're trying to say is you trust Naughty Dog to pull it off one way or the other. Even if it's not necessarily what you would do, who cares? Like, you just want it to be good, and you trust that it'll be good. Yeah.
Speaking of trust, and I'm just going to sidetrack you real quick.
Yeah.
I beat Quantum Break. I know last episode we talked about how I'd gotten to Chapter 2, mm-hmm. and so I bring this up because in the past, when we talked about Remedy, I said I trust Remedy like I would trust a Naughty Dog. I think Naughty Dog is superior. I was just using them as an example. I gotta say, real quick, and then we'll get right back on track. Quantum Break was a pretty darn good game. I look forward to playing it a second time and making different decisions, but everything about it was quality. Remedy did a great job. Nice. They pulled off stuff that I was like, I don't know if you're going to be able to do this. I like the whole TV show idea, I wasn't a Debbie Downer about it, but I also wasn't super excited. What could I say? Excited Eric or something like that? Yeah, I wasn't excited Eric. it's cheesy. But
that was good. I liked it.
Yeah, that's so good. But I wasn't super excited, but as I kept going through the game and watching it, everything is quality. Everything is great. These are why these developers are developers I trust, because they just, it doesn't matter what they're taking on. It doesn't matter how much pressure is on them. And while Remedy didn't have as much pressure as, I would say, Naughty Dog creating Uncharted 4, this was still a big first-party release for Xbox. And it was coming from a studio that has a pretty awesome track record. And they pulled it off. They did something that wasn't, you know, too close to what they've done in the past, even though some of the stuff's similar. And they nailed it. So nice. I expect the same thing from Naughty Dog. I expect no less. That they'll not only nail it, but they'll do it, I think, 20 times better than Remedy.
Nice.
All right, move on.
Yeah, no, well, speaking of Xbox games, let's talk about Gears of War 4 and this new piece of info that just came out. And I think this is something they had available in past games, but you'll know that better than I would. But it looks like Gears of War 4 will have a explicit language and gore filter that you can apply to the game.
I think you could turn the gore off. I don't remember about all these filters, but I never use filters. So
now, in the article on GameSpot, it actually says that the Developer Coalition has confirmed the upcoming sequel will feature a gore and explicit language filter, as previous games in the series did, and described that the content that will be censored. And it's really just that extreme violence and the language, you know, essentially making it PG-13 instead of R. That's what they're trying to say.
Pretty cool. Like, if I want to play it with my kids, because, you know, I don't get upset about them seeing somebody getting shot or anything. I get more like, oh, I don't want them to see like
a chainsaw, a
head getting cut off or something like that. Yeah. Or I don't want them to hear really, really bad language. So
unless it's coming from you, then it's okay.
Yeah, I'm completely fine with that.
So basically, that's my question for you, and you kind of already answered it, but I have a thought on this too, but should more games, especially rated M games, the really popular ones, should more games have an option like this where you can either have some, if you had to just insert a bunch of beeps instead of, let's say, the F word, for example, that's typically the term that will make a game or a movie rated R or rated M, mm-hmm. or other variations of the term, but also the gore factor, you know, something super violent, something super disturbing. Should more games have this kind of option? And for right now, let's set aside the idea that it would take more development time, because that's a given. It definitely would. You'd have to, in some cases, record a separate set of dialogue, or at least have an audio editor go in and bleep out certain words. You'd have to somehow edit the action itself, probably even some of the animations, to not include certain types of gore. Sure, it would take extra work. So let's set aside that. That's a given. Do you think more games should have this option? And it sounds like you already shared how the benefit could affect you, but do you think more games should have this option, or would you rather them not really worry about it?
I'm going to say yes, I would like to see it, but I also want to say that there's certain games, and you and I have had this conversation before where we talked about language. Like, I cuss, but a lot of times I cuss to either try to be funny or to express anger. Like, there's a point to my cussing. I don't mind cussing if there's a point to it. If you're just saying F this, F that, F this, F that, it kind of gets annoying and it's stupid and it loses its impact. So why did I share that? Because there's certain games that I wouldn't want that feature for, because the words and the dialogue they're using are for a specific reason, a purpose. Maybe that F word was appropriate. So my point is a Gears game, you can pull it off. Gears, a lot of people don't play Gears of War for the dialogue, the story. I'm not saying they're bad, but as a person who loves Gears, and I would put it as my top Xbox first-person franchise, I put it over Halo and all those, I don't play them for that. I play
you mean
them
first
because
party
they're
franchise,
fun.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What did I say?
First, you said first person. I was just making sure that you didn't mean first person.
Yeah, first party.
Okay.
But basically, I think that game can pull it off and nobody would care. They'd be like, yeah, I want to play with my teenage son or my 8-year-old daughter or whatever. I can just put these filters on. I'm good to go.
See, I'd like
Mortal
to
Kombat,
see...
that works.
Oh,
you know,
man,
that
Mortal
types.
Kombat could use it. I'd like to see more games experiment with it. I don't necessarily think it should be something that we as consumers should expect. But when a game does include it, it could be a nice feature that they can tout and say, hey, look, the new Call of Duty game has an option where in the campaign mode, as well as, you know, in all modes, the gore and the language has been filtered out to a certain extent. Like, maybe, you know, now you could play a rated T for teen version of this same game. The only reason I mentioned that, you know, Call of Duty, maybe the Assassin's Creed franchise, maybe Gears of War, all of those, at least Gears of War and Call of Duty, they have a multiplayer component that could be really fun with, let's say, your 11-year-old son. Or in my case, my 9-year-old son. Some of those could be really fun to play, but right now there's no chance I'll let him play. And of course, I do realize I'm a little more conservative than some, so I do limit things more than some parents do, and that's totally fine. But if I had that option, then all of a sudden I've got more options at my disposal to enjoy this hobby together with my son.
You're saying it's totally fine for what you do? What if I told you it's not totally fine to be as conservative as you are?
Then we're about to have a real awkward conversation.
What if I told you were ridiculous? worst parent ever.
That would not be the first time you've said that, though. We have recordings of you saying all of those things, so none of those are a surprise. Yeah.
All right, let's just move on then.
Yeah, let's move on. I think more games should experiment with it. I'd be curious to see if it affected anything. I know that most parents... maybe not most, but many parents with kids who play games, they don't really know the content in the games anyway, so the kids are getting all these games anyway, and if the kid is the only one playing the games, there's no way an 11, 13, whatever year old kid is going to turn on the filter. I remember that age. You wanted to see everything and experience all of it. So there's some different things they could try. I mean, with the technology today, here's just a quick example before I move on. It'd be really cool if, let's say my son, he's got his own PSN account, and he can log in and play any of the games in my library that I've approved, you know, the rating he's allowed to play. So he can't play anything rated M, but anything else he can. But let's say I get, for example, the new Call of Duty, and he wants to play it. If there was a way, with today's modern technology, that game could recognize that a person who has this limitation in ratings is playing that game, they could automatically trigger a certain version of that game with a certain filter applied. And maybe that's pie in the sky, and that's not something that most people would use. I could see it being really a really interesting experiment to see if it would help families at all. And that would help with the uninitiated parent, too, who perhaps with some help could set up a console like that with some parental restrictions, but there's no way they can filter out every single game their kids get or get their hands on. that would at least give them an automatic, you know, game nanny, as it were, for their kids. But anyway, I digress. I think it would be an interesting option to experiment with. Definitely not a requirement. I'm all for artists and developers expressing what they want to express in their game, even if it's a super violent dude bro thing with lots of swearing. You know, I know what I'm getting into if I play that game, but I am curious about the option of a filter in other games. So,
no, I agree. I would like to see it in as many games as possible, but it's not required.
Yeah, definitely not required. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Titanfall 2 then. There is a teaser trailer that was just released, and we weren't given a release date yet, but we do know the full unveil is coming on June 12th, which is the weekend that E3 gets kicked off, where EA is doing their big special thing before E3. So did you watch the Titanfall 2 trailer, number one, and what did you think? And number two, when do you think it will release? We won't know for 2 more months, but what did you think about the teaser trailer if you watched it? And when do you think it's going to drop?
I think teaser trailers are stupid. Like, just release the trailer. Like, why am I being teased on a trailer? Isn't the whole point of a trailer is to tease you about what's to come?
Yeah. No, that's true. Teaser foreplay.
I'm sorry if that's like...
Trailer foreplay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I of course, the trailer teaser to the official trailer was cool, but, I mean, it didn't really show anything.
Swords.
That was pretty much the only thing that I was like, oh, cool, we're going to be able to use swords in some way. I'm excited to see what they unveil on June 12th, and hopefully it'll release in... See, Call of Duty comes out in November.
Yeah, when do you think it's going to drop?
October?
Yeah, that would make sense to me, I think. October.
I mean, I know Battlefield used to release in October, but didn't they say a new Battlefield was coming out this year, too?
They did, and EA would certainly be smarter than to drop those two in the same window like that.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is Titanfall, if it's ready, maybe a September, a late September release, October, a late October release for Battlefield, and then an early November release for Call of Duty. That's the only thing I can think of.
I would think Titanfall 2's got a better chance of arriving this year, and the next Battlefield's got a better chance of coming next spring, just like Hardline arrived in the spring. That's just my guess.
The only reason why I think they did that with Hardline is I think they needed more time, but I think they felt like they could get away with that because it was a spinoff.
Yeah.
I know they like to release their numbered Battlefields against like direct competition with Call of Duty. Like they like to release them a couple weeks before Call of Duty comes out.
Well, I think if this past year taught us anything with Rainbow Six, we know that December is out of the question. So if they're not going to drop it in October, November, I think we're looking at 2017. But yeah.
Did Rainbow Six do terrible?
It did. It didn't do too well. Yeah. But we do know that I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I know it did horrible. But we do know that that we're going to get the full reveal on June 12th. So keep your eyes out for that, especially for those of you who liked Titanfall 1, or maybe you're just waiting for it on the PS4. It sounds like this is going to be on PS4, PC, and Xbox One. Also, there's a mobile spin-off game that's dropping sometime this year as well, a Titanfall mobile game. So that's
I mean, I already said I'm not going to buy Battlefield. I'm not going to buy, unless it's like a spin-off Battlefield. Hardlines was good. But I'm not going to buy Battlefield or Call of Duty, but Titanfall 2 I'll buy.
I know. You have a problem.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
All right, you know what? I'm going to let you buy it because I bought you Ratchet.
That's true. And man, Ratchet & Clank is so good. Yeah, it's really
good.
I'll
let you do that.
Well, 4 Wii U ports might be heading to the Nintendo NX. And this is according to industry insider Emily Rogers via Twitter. And it's interesting that she is just posting this out there, out in the open, for everyone to read like this. But she is saying that these 4 Wii U ports might be headed to the Nintendo NX. It looks like Zelda, Smash Brothers, Mario Maker, and Splatoon are at least in the early stages of development for being ported over. And it sounds like the Zelda, which is yet to be released, the Zelda Wii U game, and Smash Brothers, according to her, are guaranteed, virtually guaranteed to be ported, where Splatoon and Mario Maker are still kind of in the early stages, that they still might not be brought over.
So Zelda makes sense.
It does. That's what they did with GameCube and the Wii. And people have been talking about that for a year or two now with how, hey, with whatever Nintendo's next thing is, I wonder if this Zelda is going to be a crossover. And it looks like it's going to be that exactly. It looks like it's going to be a crossover between the two. And the only difference is if the rumors about the NX are anywhere close to true, then the hardware, the power behind the system is going to pretty heavily outclass the Wii U, which the Wii did not heavily outclass the GameCube. It was not that far above what the GameCube could do. So those games were pretty equivalent in visuals in a lot of ways. They just deferred in their controls. And so it'll be interesting to see if we're looking at a vastly superior, both visually and perhaps even, depending on the controller, gameplay version of Zelda for one system over another. That remains to be seen.
All right, so let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
All right, and this is hypothetical. As somebody who has not bought a Wii U,
yep,
but has obviously shown great interest in it.
That's me.
At least in the past,
yep,
you have.
Yep.
Let's say they make an announcement. Smash and Zelda are confirmed. They are coming out on the NX. The NX is going to be $400. It's going to be a little bit more powerful than a PS4. It's got regular, you know, pro controllers, but it also has this cool, like, handheld type controller as well. Blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
So $400 or $500 for that, for the total console. It's going to release with Zelda coming out. Now, you got to buy Zelda separate, right?
Right, yeah.
Or the Wii U says, okay, NX is coming out. We're going to drop down to $250, and we're going to include Zelda with it.
Ooh.
Do you buy neither? Do you buy a Wii U? Do you buy an NX?
That's a really good question. My first reaction is to say, you got to go with the new system. And, of course, this is all depending on what they announce about it and what their partnerships are going to be. But without me going through all those hedging my bets statements, My gut reaction is to say go with the new hardware, go with the better looking one, go with the one that's going to be the best Zelda experience, and from the sound of things, maybe the best experience for a few of the biggest Wii U games, and hold out hope that either, A, someday I'll get a super cheap Wii U, just ridiculously, like less than $100 cheap someday to catch up on all those old games, or B, that they will actually end up porting over a ton of Wii U titles to this system. It might end up being something that's super simple, and they can do that digitally or physically, and it's pretty simple. So my gut reaction is get the new hardware and continue. I've held off on the Wii U this long. Right now it should be wait until it's either backwards compatible with their next system or wait until you're getting a bargain bin on this console, and then go back and experience it.
Which I already think I saw the Wii U was like $250. I don't know if it was a sale or something, because it even stopped me, and I was like, oh, it dropped to a decent price. Yeah. It's like $250, and it came with a game.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, maybe they're already prepping to do this. Like,
you know what's one of the bigger barriers for entry for me with the Wii U is the system itself, I think, is a little overpriced. But what the problem is, if I'm going to get a Wii U, it's going to be for my whole family. Even though I'll primarily play it at the beginning, at least, I just don't know that I really want to drop $40 per controller for everyone to be able to participate at this point, because we don't have any of the Wii Motion Plus. We still have all the old school Wii controllers. We've got four of the really old school ones. We never upgraded to the Wii Motion Plus stuff.
Does this not surprise me?
It's just expensive, man. Like, that's all the peripherals you have to buy for that, and the pro controllers, and it just gets really expensive. So it's not simply $250 or $300. You're adding.
Tim doesn't actually use a DualShock 4. He actually built his own DualShock from plastic and rubber.
It's actually it's two calculators, and I just.
Like, I refuse to buy anything that's not with the console. I'll just create it myself.
Every system we own, we have at least two controllers, and that's with a purpose, because, you know, we've got a lot of people who like to play games, and so I don't want to have a system that at least one other person can't join in and play. So every system, we have two controllers, and for the Wii, of course, we've got four. And if we get a Wii U, I'm like, all right, I gotta go all in. I got to get all the controllers, maybe the nunchucks, and a couple pro controllers. That in and of itself, you're looking at $200-$300 just for the extra controllers themselves.
Yeah.
So that's a big barrier for entry for me. But anyway, that's, you know, I digress on that too. I would go with the NX. That's my gut reaction is to go with NX. Yeah.
Especially if like the version of Zelda is far more superior.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
And that's why
I
asked
wait
you
for the
because,
next Zelda. Right, right.
Because I'm already sold on the NX. I mean, unless they come out and, like I've said as a joke, like, just take a crap in a box and then put and take a marker and write NX on it.
It's got the Nintendo seal of quality on it.
I mean, I may still pay $200 or $300 for that, but you know, I don't know if I'll do $400 or $500.
Who's crap we talking about? You know,
I mean, who actually went poo?
Was it Miyamoto? Because I'm in.
All right, moving on. Next story is actually one I'm real excited
about.
All right,
so we've got two more news stories that don't necessarily require a ton of conversation unless you want to dig into this first one. But they're more just announcements that have come out about major games. Two games that I really like, and the first one I know you really like, and that is Witcher 3. It looks like the Blood and Wine expansion is coming pretty soon. We did see the official, quote-unquote, box art that came out from CD Projekt Red. Very cool.
Yeah, it's got really awesome.
Geralt sitting on this big wooden throne looking chair with this gargoyle creature crawling over the back of it while he's holding his goblet of wine. I mean, just super cool looking, or harpy or whatever it is that's crawling over the back of that chair. So
yeah,
it looks like the release date possibly was leaked for early June, but that has not been confirmed as of right now. If you're listening to this, it may have been confirmed.
It wasn't confirmed earlier today, but I 100% believe it's June 7th.
June 7th.
Because it's just a perfect time to release it. It's the summer.
Right.
It's a little after a year when the main game came out.
Right.
Yeah, I've talked about it in the past. Yeah, right. I loved The Witcher 3. I didn't even do this with Mass Effect. I never go back and play expansions, but I actually gave it's Hearts of Stone, right?
Right.
Heart of Stone or Hearts of Stone,
Hearts
I gave
Stone.
That one. Yeah, I gave that one a shot. Completely fell in love with The Witcher 3 again to the point where I was like, man, why didn't I put it higher on my top 10? It's such a great game.
It really is.
So, point being is, I'm really excited to hear that it's coming out in June. If you've never played a Witcher game, and the first question is going to come to your mind, well, should I play The Witcher 3 or should I... Don't go back. I mean, if you can get a copy of The Witcher 2 on your 360 or your PC, do it. It's worth it. But you can jump into The Witcher 3, play the game.
Here's what I would
play the expansion.
I'm glad you said that. That's actually a really good thought. I think Witcher 3, if you've never played any game in the Witcher franchise, Witcher 3 is really the only one you need to play. But the story and the lore of the first two games is very intriguing. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend you go back and experience what are kind of, at this point now, a little bit stiffer, less realized gameplay mechanics and visuals as well. It's just not up to par with what Witcher 3 offers. So here's what I'd recommend. There's a couple things. First of all, there's a ton of websites and YouTube channels that will offer you a great summary of the story from the first two. One of the best ones, I believe it was an article on either Polygon or Kotaku, I can't remember, but it was, the title of the article was Before You Play Witcher 3. It was basically, here's the story up to this point. And it did a great job of walking through the key players and the key moments of both of those games. And it's intriguing. It's like, it's almost like reading a short novel, like a short story. It's really, really good. And it walks through who's who did what. And then it kind of explains some of the choices that you had, particularly in the second game. And you do have a major choice. And what's really neat is when you do play Witcher 3, you're a few hours into the game. You're about to jump into the main area after that opening tutorial type area. And a guy is interviewing you, and he's basically just trying to keep a log of everything, and he's asking you to clarify what happened. And you have a chance there to make your decisions, as it were, from previous games. That will the effects of those will carry over into these games. So you get to establish what happened back then, learn a little bit about the history, and get things set up for 3. All that being said, if you're the kind of person who doesn't really care that much about the background and the lore, the game totally makes sense, and the world and the politics and the war and the characters, it all makes sense without that background. I just think it's a richer experience with it, so I would recommend doing that, but I would hardly say it's required, that's for sure. You could still jump in and enjoy it. Hearts of Stone needs to be something that I play soon. You recommended it, and I know, I need to play it. But Blood and Wine, I don't want to, again, we shouldn't take too much time talking about this right now, but I do know Let's tell you what, let's wait until we actually play it to talk more about it. I do know it is touted as a huge open area, brand new area, with a ton of new content in terms of time that you'll be able to spend.
Bigger than The Witcher 2 and 20 hours of content.
That's a lot. So lots to look forward to there. We'll share more about that. We'll talk more about that as it gets closer. The last little bit of news is that Hitman has been patched to improve some of the things that I criticized about it so far. Load time, stability, added challenges, hopefully cleaned up a few of the ways some of the challenges and opportunities work. And they also announced the episode 2. It's called Spagnenza. It's a fictional Italian town that's coming out next week on April 26th, or in 2 weeks, I suppose, on April 26th. So Hitman is rolling along, improving, and adding its second episode here shortly. So there you go. There's a summary of some of the biggest news stories. I don't think there was anything else big that we need to cover for right now. So what I want to do now, Derek, and this is an idea that you had, we're going to cover next episode, or maybe the episode after that, we're going to go back to our favorite consoles from each generation. We're going to talk about the next generation next time. For today, for this week, I liked your idea of talking about some of the hardest games we've played. Before we talk about our personal toughest games we've played, though, what brought this idea up? What was going through your head when you said, hey, this would be an interesting topic? Why are you thinking about some of the hardest games that you've played?
Well, Jesse White posted in Fotka. He posted
that sounds
asking,
like a bad word, buddy.
Fotka. I know, I feel like I'm like cussing in German.
Well, it sounds like someone who just learned English is accidentally swearing.
So, Jesse White posted in there basically asking, what order would you put the Souls / Bloodborne games in difficulty? Like,
right.
I think he wanted to know how hard Dark Souls 3 was.
Okay.
So where you would put it on the scale.
So not quality, but difficulty. That's what he was asking.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He wants to know, like, where you would rank them. So
okay.
A lot of people responded because, like I said, huge, coming up on Tuesday in the past few days in our group, just seeing a lot of posts about Dark Souls,
mm-hmm.
a lot of posts about Ratchet, but more on Dark Souls.
Right.
And so that's where my brain went. It was just like, you know what? I've been playing a lot of harder games this past year. And it's not that I'm anti. I know people make fun of me, Frank Clark, for being a wuss. I'm going to keep it clean. He's a little bit meaner when it comes to my video games. And in some circumstances, I am a wuss. I have no problem flipping the Switch to easy and being like, look, I'm only playing this to get the story. I don't want to get frustrated at all. I'm going to put it on easy. Plus, I told Tim before we started recording, these type of games aren't good for me because I have a bad temper. And the way I express my temper is like physically and verbally. I don't like bottle it up inside and go, I died for the 50th time. I'm okay. You know, I
who does that?
Explode.
No one does that. No one's voice goes up an octave and then they change to a British person. Not one person.
I'm completely okay.
They all of a sudden sound like Oliver Twist. I'm just thankful to be here. No.
So last night, no. I'm playing Dark Souls 3, right?
Right.
And while I'm not going to sit here and say it's the hardest Souls game, or I'm not going to get into that, I will say it became a little bit frustrating last night. Now, Tuesday night, it was fine. I actually fought the first boss, and I'm going to tell you right now, I was nervous, because I hate failing. So I was like, I don't want to fight this guy and struggle with the first boss and just feel like I wasted $60 on this game.
Yeah, no
so I
that.
Fought the first boss, and remember I told y'all earlier, I played and beat Bloodborne. One of the things I love about Bloodborne is a very offensive Souls type of game.
Okay.
Meaning, you've got your sword, but you also have a gun. You don't have a shield, you have a gun. I mean, you can use shields, but they're like wooden, stupid shields, and they're just really dumb. The game's not designed that way at all.
Okay.
So, it's very offensive. So the first time I fight this this boss, I have a knight who has this huge metal shield, who's covered in armor, and while Dark Souls 3 is definitely quicker than the past Souls games, it's not even close to being as quick and fast and offensive as Bloodborne. So I go into this battle, and I completely forget about my shield. I'm trying to do dodges and rolls and quick strikes, and I get obliterated the first time I fight this guy. And I'm like, great. I didn't blow up. I didn't freak out, but I was like, great.
No,
I
you were like, it's okay. I'm fine.
It's okay. I will make it. Just try again. So I go back. You know, and Souls games are punishing. They make you start over. You lose all your souls. So I go back. I'm like, come on, Derek. I'm nervous. Like, I'm actually, like, a little bit shaky. Like, come on. You can do this. Just you know what's coming now. Just fight him. So I get in there, and I rely heavily on my shield, and I obliterate this guy. Like, he literally touched me, I think, once. He got one good solid hit on me.
Nice.
My health was at over 75%, and I just destroyed him. And I'm going to say, because I'm not going to boast and say I'm good, I'm going to say some of it was luck, because he did knock my shield away, and for some reason didn't attack me when he knocked my shield back. I was able to roll away and then come back later and kill him. But that feeling I got was just this amazing feeling of, oh, I did it, and I did it on my second try.
Nice.
And so these Souls games are very difficult, but they are fun to play, because when you do beat them or get past a boss, or even some of the sub-bosses are harder than the boss. I actually went back and fought this, like, ice demon that you run into in, like, the first 30 seconds you're there. Now you have a choice whether you want to fight it or not. It doesn't trap you or anything like that. You see it. It's funny, because you're, like, creeping. That's the way the Souls games are. You kind of creep. And you're slowly creeping. You're like, what's around the corner? What's around the corner? And so this message pops up. I hit the button. The message says, prepare to die, or something like that. Something terrible's coming. So I'm like, all right. I start walking really slow. I look around the cliff, and I see the shiny, icy, demon-looking thing. And I'm like, nope, not doing it.
Hard pass.
No, not doing it.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I beat the first boss on Tuesday night.
Nice.
Wednesday, I through conversation on our group, I find out that Ice Demon's not that difficult. Okay? So I'm like, oh, I'll go back and fight him, because first of all, cool that I beat him. Second off, he has items that I want. So I was like, he's not harder than the guy I just beat in two tries. I should surely be able to beat this guy in one try. Plus, I've upgraded my character and gotten a new weapon. So I'm more powerful than when I would have met him in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Which I've seen people beat him in the very beginning of the game. Like, they didn't go and move on. They fought him right away.
Yeah, seems like you got everything in your favor.
Yeah, so I go back and I fight him. I lost 7 times straight.
Ooh.
I blew up to the point where, and I'm not exaggerating, this is honest to God truth, I had to put the controller down. On the 6th time I died with him having 1 hit left. And I did one of those, like, inner, like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like the stub your toe noise. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So I did that so bad. Mm-hmm. I locked my body up so bad. I was so angry that I almost fainted in my chair. I'm not lying. I almost fainted. I made myself dizzy. I had to, like, put the controller down and look down at the floor and be like, are you really this angry? So, super, super long story, a little bit shorter. I went back. I eventually beat him. It felt great. But the point I'm trying to say is the game is so frustrating and so difficult. These games are terrible for my health. I can't handle these games. Bloodborne did this to me, too. Even though I had some great moments in Bloodborne, it had some times where I was just like, why the hell am I playing this game right now? So that's where... Oh, such a long intro. Frank, please bash me. I deserve it. I'm so sorry, guys.
No, that's good. That's actually very... It's a good setup to some of the hardest games you've played. So give me a rundown of... And you can include the separate Souls games if you want in Bloodborne. Give me a rundown.
I will. But let me give you my top 3 franchise/games that I find furiously difficult. And that's with... We're going to start with Kirby. Kirby's extremely difficult. Like, F that guy.
Yeah.
That fat piece of crap.
Yeah, I know. I know. If only they made those enemies a little easier to defeat.
No. So I wrote this question, and I'm going to give our listeners a little backstory. So we share a sheet, a Google Doc. And so I wrote in a main doc, I wrote, for main topic, I wrote, what are some of the hardest games you ever played? 3 question marks. And I texted Tim, I was like, is this cool? Is this something you're interested in? So he responded back, yeah, that sounds like a great idea, blah, 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 through text. When I got home to check the notes, I go in there because Tim had updated, and I was like, oh, let me see what he put. And so he lists all his games. He then, because Tim loves to do this, he likes to write in my answers for me. So he wrote, Derek, #1, Kirby, ; #2, Telltale Games, ;
They're such hard games.
#3, Lego Games, ; And I responded back with, nailed it, you got them all.
You need a guide for those games, man. Those are all so hard.
I buy the collector's edition guide for all 3 of those franchises. I'll go through mine real quick because I had such a long intro. Ori and the Blind Forest, we talked about this in the past. Yeah. I actually had to beat it on an easy mode to see the story through. I got through 60% on normal, which actually kind of gave me confidence to think maybe I should go back and play it on normal and just beat it. Nah. But anyways, nah. But I beat it, but it was very difficult that I actually had to turn that game down. The other thing that I listed was JRPGs. I just put that in general. I really struggle with these things, and here's why I think it is. I'm going to totally take the blame. I'm going to be transparent and just reveal how stupid I am and that it is
my fault. Hang on. We're going to have a real moment here, people. Buckle up. Here we go.
So when I play JRPGs, and I've said this before, I hate reading. Like, I read the Bible, but I don't read the Bible. I let the Bible read itself to me. I like audiobooks.
Okay.
I don't like to read, right?
I wondered where you're going with that. Okay, yeah, audiobooks, sure.
All right, so JRPG, they talk too much, and they either, most of the time, don't have it audible, or when it is audible, it bores the shizzit out of me that I just skip past it. Here's why I'm explaining this to you. Most of the time, in that is where you learn how to play the game properly.
Or what you have to do next, especially old school JRPGs. Exactly. There'll be one line of dialogue that says, you need to head west past the river and then north from the lake or whatever. Yeah. And you're like, I have no idea where to go. There's not like a waypoint on my map. This is an old school game. I don't know where to go. And you missed it because it's in the dialogue. I can relate to that 100%.
Yes. So I suck at JRPGs. But a lot of it, I'm going to take the blame. I'm not going to say it is all me, but most of it is me because I just don't pay attention enough for a game that's, first of all, most JRPGs are really hard. And second of all, they are really long. So I try to shorten them as much as I can. Hmm. So when I skip through those type of things, it's my fault. But most of them are, especially the old school ones, they're just really difficult. Like, I'll have people, like, for instance, I'm going to throw Jesse under the bus here.
Uh-oh.
Jesse struggled with beating the end boss on Final Fantasy X. I don't remember anything about that. I just remember winning, finally. But that was when I had more patience and played less games. But he asked for some help. He was like, look, I want to beat this game, but I keep dying. So a bunch of our Final Fantasy experts, and there's a ton of them, they came pouring in. And what's amazing about these guys and girls is they don't have to look this stuff up. It's all in their head.
Yeah.
They all understand how to beat every boss because they've done it so many times. So they start spewing in all this, like, do this, you should have done this, you should have leveled here, you should have blah, blah, blah. And I'm reading this stuff going, how the hell did I beat this game? Like, I don't even know what the heck they're talking about. It's that overly complicated is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, JRPGs, I just sum them all up. Some of them are obviously easier than others because, well, now there's even easy modes built into them. Final Fantasy VII. But I'll put those all together. The other thing is Souls games, Bloodborne. We talked about it. I think all the Souls games are difficult. I think they take a lot of patience. I think Bloodborne took a lot of patience. I think the only time they're semi-simple is if you call in a co-op co-op partner, and they even make those parts of the game difficult to do. I once was fighting a boss in Bloodborne, and it took me, no lie, 40 minutes to get a co-op partner. I just sat there waiting.
Wow.
I went and made lunch, ate lunch, came back, sat back in front of the TV, and was like, are you freaking serious? And I finally just gave up and went and fought the boss by myself and beat it. But the point is if you're really struggling with a boss, and I know some of you guys out there are just really good at these games, and you beat them in 2-3 tries, that's not me. Some of these bosses become actually literally impossible. I ran into one on Bloodborne, don't remember the name. It was an optional boss, but I really wanted to beat it because I came so close to beating it. I think like the second time I tried, and after that, it just whipped my butt. And I went online and I found out I was not the only one, that it was pretty common that most people were losing to this particular boss. I probably lost to, I think it was a girl boss, like 30, 40 times before I just gave up.
Yeah.
I didn't even do a co-op partner because nobody ever showed up.
Holy
and
cow.
I just went, you know what? It's an optional boss. I've done good in this game. I'm done with you.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to fight you anymore.
Yeah, that's a good decision.
Yeah. So, the Souls games, very difficult. I love them. I appreciate the people that get into them, that beat them, and that platinum and do all that. I really do appreciate them because I understand the difficulty of them.
Yeah.
I am just speaking on a personal level. I don't have the patience. I don't have the temperament. And for the sanity? No. That would be for my sanity. But for my marriage to survive and for my kids to not grow up, you know, having to deal with a terrible father, I can only play those games so much. So, that being said, will I beat Dark Souls 3? Probably not. Mm. But I also said that about Ori and the Blind Forest.
Okay.
I also said that about a lot of other games that I've gone on to beat.
Yeah.
I also didn't think I was going to beat Bloodborne. I bought that game with the intentions of playing it for like 5 to 10 hours, getting out the little bit of joy, being able to talk it up.
And it hooked you, though.
But it hooked me. Yeah. I went and beat it. I didn't beat all the bosses by myself. I beat over half of them by myself, and I co-op the rest. But I'll do the same thing with this one. I'll play it as long as I don't kill. And the fact that I almost fainted last night, not a good start. Not a good start.
Yeah.
But that's my list. That's what came off the top of my head.
Well, if you had to pick, this is going to be kind of hard, I think, but if you had to pick just one of the Lego games that gave you the hardest time, which of those games drove you to knock yourself out? Was it the Harry Potter one? The year 4 through 7, Harry Potter was rough, right? Am I right?
No, I didn't play those.
Neither did I. I don't know.
I actually had a lot of trouble with Batman.
Yeah. Collecting all those pieces.
Because of costume switches.
What's really hard about that game is that you literally can't lose. That's the hardest part about it, is that no matter how many times you die, no matter how many Lego pieces you lose, you can't die. You have to actually shut the game off to lose. That's the hardest part about it. Really.
That was what I was doing wrong. I kept turning off from boredom and thinking that I was losing the game.
You mentioned JRPGs. To me, the hardest thing about those games is staying focused on them. So if it's a well-written, fun game with good combat mechanics and, you know, decent characters and an incentive to keep playing, leveling up, then it's not too hard to keep going through it. If it's lesser in some way, or if there's some sort of random steep difficulty curve, which does happen in some of those games, then I can see them, you know, being added onto to the difficulty list. For the most part, I think JRPGs, at least the traditional kind, they simply require a lot of time and a ton of leveling up, a ton of walking back and forth right outside of the town where your fight is to get up those next few levels or whatever, to learn those next few abilities. So, yeah, I could agree with some of the JRPGs, but probably not all of them. My list, I'll just go from lowest up to the most difficult that I could think of. I included Ori and the Blind Forest. I would go ahead and recognize that game as a very difficult game. I was able to beat it on the normal setting. I don't think there was an option for a hard setting, I don't think. But whatever, I beat it on the regular game setting. It was very challenging. Certain sections in particular were very challenging. but very rewarding. I really liked that game a lot. We've talked about it before. F-Zero, that racer from Nintendo that they haven't touched in a while here. I especially remember, and keep in mind, I never owned a GameCube. That was a system my younger brother owned, and I played F-Zero on that, and I found that to be incredibly difficult. And maybe it's just because I wasn't used to that kind of racer. It didn't play like I remembered it from the Super Nintendo days. I just remember it being very, very difficult for a racing game. So I would throw F-Zero on there. Aru's Awakening, I've touched on that before for the PS4. And that's one of those ones where the difficulty curve takes a dramatic turn around the 50 to 60% mark through that game. And then towards the end, I think it's almost impossible to complete. There's an N64 game called Star Wars Shadows of the Empire. Do you remember that game? Came out late 90s.
No, I never played it.
Not a great game. Of course, back in the day, I thought it was cool. It was a Christmas gift present, so it was one of those games that you get for Christmas, and it's your only new game, so it's all you play for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I played it a lot. It is very tough. There's certain platforming parts in that kind of third-person action shooter. There's certain platforming elements that are nearly impossible, and the visuals are pretty muddy, so it's hard to know where to go. It's a pretty tough game. Marble Madness for the Game Boy was my number 9 difficult game. If you ever played any of the old-school Marble Madness games, I think they had them for the NES as well, and maybe a few others, but I remember it on the Game Boy, and I couldn't get past the first few levels. And there's really not a way to, it's a puzzle game. And so once you can only progress so far, and then once you lose, then you have to start all over again. So it's not the kind of game where you get to level 9 and then start again next time on level 9. It's the kind of game where you got to start at the beginning and get as far as you can. Very, very tough, Marble Madness. Staying with the old school games, Super Star Wars for the Super Nintendo. Did you ever play any of these games? Or Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi? Did you play those?
I hate Star Wars, so.
Oh, that's true. All right, you hate all things that are good. Well, Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back, and Super Return of the Jedi, they're three side-scrolling action games. You get to be Luke with your blue lightsaber and spin around and do cool double jumps. They're really fun and cool-looking, especially for Super Nintendo games, but they were so hard. I feel like especially the first one, for me, for some reason, felt really hard. But anyway, all three of those games were tough. Moving on. I thought that Punch-Out for the original NES was quite difficult. It's more of a rhythm game, puzzle type of game, than it is a boxing game. But once I got to that final wave of boxers to fight against, I could never get any farther than that. I always had to rely on others who were better than I was to get to Mike Tyson and then to win. I could never get that far. I just couldn't get the patterns down.
Yeah, I used to play that game a lot when I was younger, and I can't remember, but we didn't get far. It was one of those games where it was like, get to the boxer that you can't beat and then just restart it.
Right, yeah, I remember the first wave wasn't too bad. I remember finally figuring out the secret to King Hippo. That felt really good. And the one-hit kills for Bald Bull and for the Tiger Guy. And as you advance, you start to realize the quick weaknesses of some of these guys. But then towards the end, you have to do rematches against some of the guys you fought in the first round, and now they're way harder, and that's where it got too tough for me. The Wii reboot, I never played the Super Nintendo one, believe it or not, even though I was a huge SNES gamer. I never played the Super Nintendo Super Punch-Out, but I still have a copy of the Wii version of Punch-Out, and it's very good. It's really, really fun, and you turn the controller sideways, you can play it just like the old school one. Very colorful, very cartoony. The art style is neat, and it's way easier. It's still hard, but it's way easier than the old school NES. So that's number 7. Number 6 would be Ollie Ollie 2, the skateboarding game that came out in the PS4. I believe it was last year around this time. Very challenging game. I won't dig too much more into that one, but it is hard.
I've discovered you play a lot of trash games.
No, these are all good games. They're just hard. On the N64, I just disagreed with you and moved on. On the N64, I played a game called Hybrid Heaven. Have you heard of this game?
Nobody's heard of this game. It's trash.
Hybrid Heaven was a really weird government conspiracy game for the N64 with super blocky characters, but there was like this underground world with these aliens, and you did this mixed martial arts style fighting, but you were also, I think you were a Native American, so like there was this Native American spiritual aspect to it, but there was this replacement clone of the president. It was a really weird storyline, but the combat. What's that?
Now know why you like Jared Petty.
Because I play weird games.
Because you are Jared.
I am not Jared Petty. I'm not even close. But the combat is very difficult. It's a weird combination of turn-based and kind of like a wrestling-style game. It's hard to describe unless you've played it. You have to shift around this big cube of an area and then time your hits at the right time. It's very hard, very, very challenging game.
Yeah, I'm going to go buy an N64 to play it now.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing your review. Number four is Trials, that motorcycle game.
Yes, I would agree with this. Even though I don't put this type of stuff on my list, this game is infuriating.
Yeah, Trials is very tough. Once I got to the extreme levels, I barely beat any of the courses. Usually I can get through all the ones on hard, and even those are really tough. Trials is tough. Super Meat Boy, I put on there. And then I just lumped together old NES platformers. Ninja Turtles, Ninja Gaiden, Mega Man, Battletoads, Double Dragon, I didn't put on there, but Contra.
Oh, that's a good one I should have put on there. Did you ever play Ninja Gaiden on the Xbox, the original Xbox?
That game was infuriating.
Yeah. And then they re-released it on like the PS3 and Vita.
Dude, I tried that game on the Xbox. Like I said, I didn't own the original Xbox, but I remember going over to my friends. They had Ninja Gaiden. They had some kind of Oddworld spinoff. They had a few other Xbox games that I couldn't play anywhere else. And I remember trying Ninja Gaiden and being like, dude, this isn't fun. This is impossible.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a super cool game, but I don't even think I got past the first boss.
Oh, it gets so
hard. That was with me playing with my friends, too. Yeah. We were like switching back and forth. We were like, This is just impossible.
Well, and it kind of was in the spirit of the NES original and its follow-ups. I mean, ridiculously hard games. Certain levels, you couldn't get up to the next level unless you timed getting hit by an enemy at the right time to get up that high. It was very confusing, very, very difficult. And the number one hardest game that I've played that came to my mind today, at least, was Titan Souls for the PS4. It came out last year. Very much in the vein of a Souls game from what I've heard, in that you're going to fight these bosses and you have to learn their patterns. You have to try over and over and over and over again until you spot that weakness or that area that you can attack, that you can exploit, that way you can defend. So that would be the number one toughest game. And since I am not a Dark Souls or Bloodborne gamer yet, I haven't really given those games a shot. Those aren't really on my list. But there you go. Hopefully for those of you who enjoy some retro games, some of those that I listed stood out. And you could relate with.
So here's what I want to do. We normally end the show on like me doing my words of wisdom, and since that went and crossed the line and was cut off rudely, I think we're gonna end the show on a challenge.
Okay.
And that challenge is, I want anybody who actually listens to our show, the 2.456325.
There
people,
it is. It's been a while. There it is.
To go on Facebook, go on to Fotka, and I love that. Jeez. I don't know why. I'm going to annoy people with that. Fotka. I want you to go on Fotka, and I want you to hashtag Tim Souls. Let's get Tim playing Souls game. Let's put it this way. I'm the wuss of the group. I have no problem admitting it. I would rather have a relaxing, easy time playing my video games. You are the one, and I'm not saying you don't like the relaxing times, obviously you do, but you're the one that clearly likes games that are a little bit more difficult, that are challenging.
Yeah, I do.
Like, even when we were playing, I've got the name Birthright in my head, but I can't think of the name. Fire Emblem.
Fire Emblem, yeah.
And you were playing Fire Emblem. You're like, oh, I like to play it on this difficulty level, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, shut up.
And my voice went like that, too. I was like, well, I only play it on permadeath.
I only play it on permadeath on very hard.
That's a pure experience.
Now, honey, go get me some wine while I talk crap about this wussy boy over here, Derek.
She's like, why do you keep talking like that?
So anyways, challenge. Let's challenge Tim. He has access to it.
I do.
We don't game share, but he has access somehow magically to to Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3. Yeah. I bought those digitally, but we don't game share.
No.
But he has them.
Don't worry about the details, guys. Don't worry about the details. Those would bore you. All right, now, real quick, what's your goal? Do you want me? Are you trying to get me to play Bloodborne? Or are you trying to get me to play Dark Souls 3? What are you trying to get me to play?
I mean, I like Bloodborne more. I think I would like to just... I'd like you to dive in and give it a solid
four or five hours. You just want me to pick one and go with it.
Pick one, dive in, at least play the first boss, beat it, which I know you will. You'll figure out how to beat either one of those bosses. They're not hard. And once you figure out how to beat it, tell me if it's hooked you or if you're like, no, it's just still not my thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I mean, I played The Witcher 3 on that, not the hardest one. I forget what that one's called, Death March, I think. I played on the second the hardest one, though. That was difficult.
I always play The Witcher games on the most difficult. it's just how we do things, Derek. God, you stuck up gamer.
Oh my goodness.
Alright, that's our show.
Yeah,
folks.
That's it. I just picture my show. You're picturing me as like this snotty Frenchman sitting there with my pipe leaning back like, oh, you're a gamer, are you? Oh.
Gamers don't play on easy.
Oh boy. All right, well, if people take up the challenge, if we get enough people to hashtag, what should be the... Well, you know what? We'll figure it out later. If enough of you get the movement going, then I'm willing to...
Yeah, I mean, there's enough Souls fanatics. We should at least get 5 to 10 people hashtagging them.
Get it going. All right. Thank you, guys. Take up that challenge. And if not, that's fine with me, too. If you want to, you can just hashtag Derek No. You know, you just do that, too. That's fine. That's fine. Either one.
Hashtag it.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things here.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Oh, I play games. Oh.
My name's Tim.